it's time for another episode of the Social Sidekick Podcast. This week, I'm featuring an entrepreneur who's a business coach and has her own web TV show.
Are you ready to escape the 9-to-5 rat race and move into the next stage of your career? Get ready to take real-life strategies from today's entrepreneurs to accelerate your own personal journey towards success. It's time for Social Sidekick with your host, Lori Solgon. Where are you headed?
Welcome to the Social Sidekick Podcast. I'm your host, Lori Solgon, and I want to thank you all for joining me for this episode. This is a show for current or future entrepreneurs looking for insight into business strategies, networking tactics, and social media marketing. The show notes for this and all episodes are at my website, socialsidekickpodcast.com, and you can contact me via email at Lori, L-A-U-R-I-E, at socialsidekickpodcast.com with questions or comments or to sign up for my mailing list. Just in case you're new to the show, I have rescue parrots in the other room, my own little flock, and you may hear them come through in the background. They can get a little chatty when they hear me talking because they want to be on the show, but I've told them they need to be entrepreneurs instead of just sitting around being pretty like some reality star. My guest today is Erica Duran. Erica is a business coach and freedom-based luxury lifestyle designer. I can't wait to find out what that is. She provides expert guidance, support, and accountability to service-based entrepreneurs. What does that mean exactly? She helps them build businesses where they can work from anywhere and consistently earn between $5,000 and $20,000 or more per month. Yeah, I'll sign up for that. She also sets up their structures so that they have freedom to work about 3 days a week. Yeah, I definitely want to sign up for that. Doesn't that sound great? Erica travels full-time, staying at the luxury resorts that sponsor her podcast and web TV show. Erica, welcome to the Social Sidekick Podcast.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
And so in our pre-interview chat, you said you're in Las Vegas, but I've got a feeling you go all over the place. So give me a little bit of an idea of what a freedom-based luxury lifestyle designer does.
Right. Well, I mostly help people get to their core desires before they set up their business, just so they're not giving themselves a bad job, another bad job. It doesn't have to involve travel, but I tend to attract a lot of people that are interested in that. And I'm in Las Vegas right now. I usually go to Hawaii about once a quarter for a month, and I'm based in Orange County, California.
Before you started this business, what would you consider was your original 8-to-5?
It was in the hotel industry. I was a hotel executive for about 15 years with Marriott. I worked at Disneyland through college, but most of my adult career was at various hotel organizations.
And that made you do a lot of traveling for them or what?
Not too much. I was in their corporate office in Orange County, and I was mostly working with their marketing for their timeshare properties.
You know, I didn't know that, Marriott or some of these other places had timeshares. I always assumed that they were these little goofy organizations. You know, you go up to for those of you who have never been to Las Vegas, you can go to Las Vegas and walk around, and somebody will sooner or later come up to you and say, hey, we will give you a free tickets to this show and this and that and the other, and all you have to do is sit for two boring hours while you see our timeshare thing, and
right.
Then, be able to say, no, I don't want to buy it. But so you worked, you said something about the timeshare. Do you work?
Marriott, Hilton, and Disney all have very high-end timeshare properties. Most of them are high-rises. And I did the marketing for the West Coast in Hawaii.
So the marketing that you did, was it ever, and I hate to say this, but was it ever those people that we would go and sit and listen to the thing, or were you more at a higher level than that?
I was doing the mail pieces that got people to what you're talking about.
Oh, interesting. Very, very interesting. I'm sure that's a whole episode or 10 episodes of other podcasts. You could just talk about timeshares for hours, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about you and your current business. So how did you get into being a business coach and freedom-based luxury lifestyle designer? Boy, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, it's a mouthful, but I guess it really says what it is. So a lot of people like it. It's different, so that's good. But how I got into this, it kind of slowly evolved over the past 10, 15 years. First, I was an in-person professional organizer for a really long time. And then that I wanted to take my business online. So then I thought, well, how do I translate organizing it all into online? And so I started teaching productivity and time management to busy entrepreneurs. And through that, I just kept getting so many business questions, and not just business questions, but how do I do this business, whatever, on, you know, in a very productive fashion. So it was both of that. So that's where the 3-day work week comes in too, is not just having a business where you're at your computer all day long, but that you actually have a life outside of your business as well.
Yeah, time management is a very, very good thing to have. In fact, I've found that many people who are extremely busy are very productive because one of the things that they're an expert at is managing their own time, because if they don't, they'll never get anything done.
Right. And their priorities, mainly working on the right things and not being crazy busy.
And most entrepreneurs will know if they're working, if they're working the system properly, that being an entrepreneur is a 24/7. It's not, you know, oh, when I feel like it, when I get up at 10 o'clock in the morning or whatever. How do you get this down to 3 days or about 3 days? What are some of the tips that you can throw out there that we would have to pay you normally a lot of money for?
Well, one thing is that the first 3 weeks I work with someone, it is digging deep into their core personality and their core desires so that we know exactly what their goals are. So that's the first thing I would say, is being super clear on your goals. Having a really, this is going to sound cliche, but having a really solid target market so that you know and you can focus exactly on who those people are and go after them instead of kind of spinning your wheels. And another thing I do with people and that might help here is we automate a lot of things. So we automate all our social media, our client contracts, and the way they receive their packets and information and everything is all automated in, I don't know if I can name a system, but I actually use 17 Hats, and they're actually going to sponsor my podcast soon, so it's kind of a cool way to work with them. But I've been using them for about a year now, and they've literally saved me 8 hours per client, I would say, and just admin junk that I would normally have to do.
That's really interesting. I've never heard of 17 Hats, and automation is really good. You know, you usually hear about Hootsuite or some of these other online productivity for sending out your social media, but 17 Hats I've never heard of, and I'm assuming it's not just social media, it's other things as well.
Oh, yeah, 17 Hats is not social media, so I apologize for the confusion. I use Meet Edgar for the social media aspect of everything, and then 17 Hats is for your client quotes, your emails, your bookkeeping, contracts, all that kind of admin stuff that you would do with a client, a CRM system, customer mm-hmm. relationship management system, is all in there. So I got rid of a whole bunch of other tools as well, and a whole bunch of monthly dings on my credit card because of this one tool. So I was very excited when I saw it, and then I couldn't stop talking about it. And then they asked me if they could be a sponsor on the show. So it's been really great to see that whole relationship form.
That's very, very interesting. Do you have two businesses? Do you have one that's a business coach and then the one where you travel? Or do you travel?
No,
they're this one and the same.
They're one and the same. When I'm traveling, it's my business coaching and my productivity content in my podcast and my web TV show. But the resort is the backdrop of the show on the video, or it's frequently mentioned in the podcast. So it's really all intertwined. And that's what I do with my clients too, not necessarily giving them the same model I have, but whatever we can do to intertwine their fun and their business, or their lifestyle and their business, and make it part of their brand, it just makes business a whole lot more fun, and it makes you unique and stand out in the marketplace.
Do you ever travel overseas, or is this mostly United States?
It's mostly beachy type places. I'm a big ocean beach fan. Not necessarily, you know, swimming around the water or anything, but I love, you know, jogging on the beach and things like that, and having the views from the balconies and things like that. Caribbean, Hawaii, Orange County, Santa Barbara. I kind of stick to those places. Someday I might, you know, venture out. But right now I, you know, am focusing on building the business as well. So I don't, it isn't really in my desires right now to go all over the place, I guess.
And that's very important, because as John Lee Dumas and other people say, when they talk about either a podcast or your business, you need to niche down. You need to have a focus. And if you're all things to all people all over the place, you're not going to get anywhere yourself.
Yeah, part of it's staying on brand, and part of it's just because I don't want to yet.
Or spread yourself too thin, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure I will someday, but I'm really loving living on brand right now and staying in the more tropical type places.
So the Erica Duran brand, I see that you just have a whole ton of social media that I was looking at a little bit before the podcast interview. I haven't had a chance to really dive deep into it, but it looks like it is a really nice brand. Everything is focused. You use the same photograph and some of the things down in the weeds that we don't always talk about. I interviewed somebody for an episode that hasn't aired yet and mentioned to her that her pictures are on one social media platform, it's this picture, on that social media platform, it's that picture. I'm tripping over my own tongue, but basically it was a little confusing to me. I went to Podcast Movement in July of this year, and they said, get a professional looking picture and put it everywhere. Make sure that it's consistent. And brand consistency is very important. How do you tell your clients? How do you let them know? How do you educate them on their brand, so to speak, to get the biggest bang for their buck?
Sure. I would highly recommend the professional pictures to put everywhere, the same one, the best one, I guess, or the one that speaks most to your brand. And really go there with them. If your brand is luxury but you love nature, maybe wear some sort of gown and be barefoot in the forest or something to really
bring
out. That's
awesome. That's an awesome
visual. Bring out something that's unique about you. And you know, branding is more than just what color you use and what font you use. Good brands really stand for something. So a lot of it's in the words you use, and the way you communicate on social media is going to be a big part of your brand.
When you started this particular business, because you had all of these contacts at resorts, did you have to do any external networking?
Well, there was a big gap between that. So there's about a 10-year gap, and I'm all cold calling now. There's no relationship from 10 years ago helping me.
Are you calling any of your former contacts in the resort industry, or are you calling people who you believe are more the appropriate target for your current business?
Well, I have basically no contacts. It's been over 10 years, and everyone's moved on pretty much. Everyone that I would have known in that industry, they're really, it's a very high turnover industry, so no one's there. So these are all brand new contacts, and we either attract them through Twitter, or my intern emails the resorts basic contact us, whatever, and then we ask for the appropriate person. So we don't always get to the right person the first, second, or third time that we contact them.
That was one thing I learned at Podcast Movement, was to be consistent and persistent. So if somebody says no the first time, you try them again. And if they say no the second time, you try them again. Because sooner or later, it could be that it's just not the right time for them. They're not saying no because they don't want to talk to you. They may be saying no because it's not the right time, so you try them again. But of course, you don't do it like every day. You do it every few months or things like that. With your social media, and you mentioned Twitter, do you troll is the word that's coming to mind. That's not the word I want to use because that has a negative connotation. But do you look through, let's say, LinkedIn or Twitter or other platforms for potential clients?
For clients, it's mostly through attraction marketing. So I don't, like you said, troll them. The podcast sponsorship as well, it's more of an attraction marketing than a interruption type marketing or a stalking type marketing. So
I love that. I have never heard, not the stalking part. We all know about stalking, but I've never heard, because I don't have a marketing background. I love that attraction marketing. I've never heard anybody say that before. So elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, it's more about attraction, so instead of stalking, and it is a lot to do with your branding and being visible online and just putting great content out there that's helpful and gets noticed and shared so that you're attracting people to your business rather than trying to hustle your way through getting more leads and more contacts for your business, which, I mean, there is a place for hustling and following up and getting in front of the right people, but it makes it your business a whole lot less stressful when you can do it through the attraction methods rather than the interruption methods.
Yeah, because nobody likes being trolled and nobody likes being stalked and nobody likes, to the best of my knowledge, they don't like being sold. I've had a conversation with multiple guests about one-on-ones where you go to a one-on-one thinking you're going to just meet the people and chat, and you're there for 2 minutes and then they pull out their sales presentation. That's not why I'm here. I want to get to know you. If I like you, then I'll want to get to know your business. You have a podcast, you have a web TV show. And a lot of us know about podcasts, but a lot of us don't know about web TV shows. So tell me about that. That sounds so exciting.
Yeah, it's basically a podcast that you can watch, basically. So it's just a video, you know, version of a podcast. I haven't put it on iTunes yet, but it's on YouTube. And it's just teaching people about entrepreneurship and productivity and things like that with the resorts in the background of the video so that the resorts get showcased and I can still teach my own content. It's not like going around and interviewing the hotel executives or anything. It's all my content, but it's using the resort as a backdrop, makes it more interesting and stand out, and it's on brand for me.
Yeah, almost another Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. That sounds like fun. Do you ever interview anybody on your podcast or on your web TV show?
I haven't on the web TV show yet. I might. The podcast, I did do a lot of interviews last year, and when I surveyed my audience, very strongly, almost in the 90 percentile, preferred the solo episodes over guest episodes. So I'm scaling back greatly the amount of interviews I do. And it's very flattering that they say that, but it's also more work for me, I think, to, you know, constantly come up with the new content to share with them. But yeah, they, for some reason, they like my intros better than the actual content sometimes, and because it gives them more of a lifestyle look instead of the how to do this on Twitter or whatever. It gives them more of a personal connection to me, I guess. So yeah, that's survey your audience. It's eye opening.
I was going to say that's a very powerful tool as a survey, because you might think, oh yeah, everybody wants this and this is what they like and blah, blah, blah. And then you realize, no, it's the other thing. And I think it's just very, very speaks volumes that you survey your audience and you found out what they like. Have you only surveyed them once or do you do that periodically?
I only did it once. I am going to do it periodically, though, because my audience keeps changing as I attract different people. But yeah, it was a really eye-opening thing to do. And my show's not that old, so it was the right time.
Mm-hmm. And what's very important, and I hear you mention this, is content. I believe even if you call yourself a web TV person or a podcaster, and I don't mean you personally, I mean all of us, mm-hmm. We are content creators. We are content generators. And in order to be content creators and give value to our listeners and or our clients, we have to come up with the content. And if your brain isn't thinking about that content, or you've thought that you've put out just about every piece of content you could ever come up with. Doesn't matter. You still have another week that you have to come up with some content. That's why I like having guests, because it's all about them instead of me. And that takes the focus off of me. Do you have a favorite, not topic, but area of content that you like to cover a lot? Or do you mix it up? What's your basic content model, so to speak, in the sense of what you give, you know, what you give a value to your clients and your listeners?
Yeah, I like to be really relevant. So most of my content has started from some sort of question or concern from my private clients or audience, or, you know, podcast audience, or someone following me on social media. So that's how I try to stay really relevant to what they want to know about, is taking their questions and turning it into content. And it could be one tiny small question, and I'll turn it into like a 3-page answer.
That is absolutely awesome. Yeah, I had an episode where I just answered questions that people had, but I never thought of doing a whole episode on something where I could really expand on that topic, because certain topics really need a lot more time.
Right. And I just wanted to give them a really thorough answer. And I do a lot of, well, this is what the industry says to do, and this is how I would do it. So I show them, you know, this is like the real answer, and this is how I would actually do it.
So I normally do this in a different order. I'm kind of doing it backwards a little bit today. But how did you develop the idea for your current business? What came first, the chicken or the egg, so to speak?
My current business just evolved out of having productivity and time management clients, and they started asking me various business questions because they saw me doing something, or they wanted to know how to do something they heard somewhere else more productively. So just constantly listening to what was coming at me and then creating programs to fit what they needed.
If somebody comes to you as a brand new client, they've seen your web TV show, they happen to see you recording at a resort and wanted to find out, what is she doing over there? I got to find out what she's doing over there. If you get a brand new client, how do you start with them? Do you just find out mostly about their business or their goals? What do you start out with?
Yeah, I have a very thorough welcome packet that they get when they sign up, and they fill that out before our first launch call. We have a launch call to kind of set everything up for the rest of our time together. And in the welcome packet, it's just very in-depth and also asks people the same question in several different ways. So if I ask you the same question in a different way, I get the same answer, then that's probably the truth. So they get that, and then they do their launch call so that we can kind of set a timeline and kind of flesh out the most important things, like their target market and things like that, in the very beginning. And then we just work together step by step, putting their whole business together.
Let's say I see you at a resort and I come up to you and ask you what you do. How do you convert me? And I don't want to steal any trade secrets or anything, but how would you convert me? Because I want to find out about your business, but I'm not ready to sign up yet to get all of the things that you just mentioned. So how would you at least talk to me or try to convert me? And again, that sounds like a trolling thing, and it's not. But basically, yeah. We all have to convert clients at one point to grow our businesses. So how would you, what does Erica do to try and take somebody she just met and convert them into a client?
Right. So no one's ever come up to me at a resort. Most of my clients come from Facebook or other social media. In the beginning, they came from in-person networking. And I guess to help your audience, the one thing I would say is to set up a time to chat privately with anyone. If you meet them on Facebook or you meet them in person, is you need to get them off that platform as quick as possible and into a private phone call. I don't even recommend the coffee date and stuff like that, because it's a big waste of time for the most part. And it's kind of unfocused. You're in a loud, you know, Starbucks or something like that. So getting them off whatever platform you met them, whether it was an in-person networking meeting or social media, and saying, you know, I would love to speak with you and see, you know, if there's a possibility of us working together, but let's set a time outside of this venue to speak.
That is a phenomenal tip. That's a great tip. I never thought of that because I always did when I did have a side business, which I haven't really closed, but I don't really work at right now. I'm retooling my business. Mm-hmm. I would meet at people at Starbucks, but of course, those are local people, and they wouldn't be my clients anyway. They wouldn't be my target audience. But that is a great tip. So sidekicks, listen to that. Pay attention. Write that down because that is a great tip. And I will have all of Erica's tips at my website, socialsidekickpodcast.com. Awesome tip. So, Erica, we're doing the reinvent the spiel, which is something that was negative and how you turned it into a positive. Erica, what's your spiel?
Yeah, well, I think it's really powerful for especially new entrepreneurs to start discerning what they're available for and what they're not available for. So if you're kind of, I'm never going to get clients, or I don't have the money, or I don't have the money for this or that, to turn it around to a more confident, powerful statement, like, I'm not available to be broke or struggling anymore. Something like that, rather than being in the victim whiny type of spiel.
Very interesting. So is that something that you used for yourself way back when? Was that your negative in that you were thinking, and this happens with a lot of women too. Sometimes it's called the imposter syndrome and sometimes it's called other things, but they don't think they're good enough. For example, if you apply for a job, I've heard this, I've read this. If a woman sees a job opening and applies and wants and knows she can do it, but if she doesn't match, like there are 8 things listed, and if she doesn't match 8 things, she won't apply. Where a man will see 1 thing on that list that he can do, 7 things that he can't, and he'll still apply. It's an interesting mindset. So was your mindset that you weren't good enough, but now you said, I'm going to say to myself, I am good enough. I can do this. What was your mindset? What was your negative that you turned into a positive?
Mine wasn't that I wasn't good enough. I was actually angry because I thought my content and stuff was better than the people I saw making a lot of money. So mine was a little bit backwards. But you can use the I'm not available. You can use it for all kinds of things. Like, I'm not available to eat unhealthy food anymore if there's a weight problem, or I'm not available to settle in a relationship anymore. Like, you can use it in all areas of life.
Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of goal writing out and goal speaking verbally so that you put the thoughts out to the universe. Mm-hmm. And I like the I'm not available, but I think, and you may do this, I think I would also add, I'm not available to do this, but I am available to do that. I think that would be an interesting way to phrase that. So I'm going to look into adding some of that to my own goals. All right. So that's another episode today of the Social Sidekick Podcast. And Erica, thanks so much for joining me on the show. I will have all of Erica's contact and social media information at my website, socialsidekickpodcast.com. You'll be able to click on any of those links to go straight to Erica's content and or her website and find out about her business and how she can potentially help you. Sidekicks, on your journey to and through entrepreneurship, where are you headed? Thank you so much, Erica, for joining me today.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure.
That's all for this episode, so be sure to head over to socialsidekickpodcast.com for show notes covering everything from today's topics to more information on our guests. We look forward to getting you to the next stage of your career here on Social Sidekick.